Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different
Welcome
Folks.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Well, I wasn't sure if my introduction man was going to come on tonight. So once again, welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, my special guest is a healer and consciousness coach, Omkar. He's a lifelong activist for conscious transformation. He passionately runs Holistic Omkar, a grassroots organization for conscious living and expansion, integrating Eastern mysticism and Western scientific paradigms to guide agents of conscious change to have a huge transformative impact on the world. Connecting the yin and yang energies of receptivity and action to create a unique path for healers, coaches, and other guides to bring their transformational healing gifts to the world. An agent of change, guiding practices of deep inner healing, awareness, acceptance, and strength to bring the new paradigm of consciousness to Earth. Omkar's personal story is one of realization with mystical schools and wisdom keepers across the earth, from cultures of India and Tibet to the Inca and Maya, from energy and plant medicine of the jungle, tantra, and yoga to angel consciousness schools. Alongside this mystical aspect of life in the West, he has also been involved in the scientific domains of physics, psychology, and systems design, and running entrepreneurial businesses. His approach is to live life in its totality, reaching for the stars whilst being deeply connected to the earth. Love it. Omkar, welcome. Once again, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. It's a real pleasure to join you today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I just love that last statement that was in your autobiography about living life in its totality. And, you know, it always reminds me of how important it is to stay grounded, but to reach for our dreams. And I wondered if you could start off a little bit talking about that as a starting point.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the essence of some of the fundamental nature of our spiritual existence for me, that we're very much physical beings having this spiritual understanding of who we are, and we're spiritual beings having an understanding of this physical life that we're living as well. And it's not simply black or white and one or the other, that we live really as one complete being connected to the stars and connected to the earth.
Well, you know, I always end the show by saying that we're spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we allow it to be. A lot of people seem to shut themselves off from that aspect of themselves. And I wondered what words of advice you would have to people that might be struggling with opening themselves to their spiritual sides.
I guess that's a very pertinent point. I mean, if you think back to when we were all children, we were all completely playful and innocent. And children, when they're in their playfulness, have the most joyous expressions and experiences of life. You see the playfulness on a child when they're playing in the garden, or in the simplicity of life when they live. And if you look at the experience of a child, it's the world of fairies, it's the world of fantasy, it's the world of really just creativity and joy. Now, spirituality for me, life for me, should be really an expression of that. It should be the connection of that freedom, once again, really to be able to live in that freedom. And if you think about the joy that you can have as a child, as an innocent being, that's the essence of spirituality for me.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I love the teachings of Esther Hicks, which she teaches about how there's nothing more important than to maintain consistent moments of joy. And I believe that that is our spiritual birthright, and that a lot of people seem to forget that along the way, too. What are some of the tools that you would suggest to people to stay connected to their joy so that they can experience that as the majority of their experience?
So, I mean, it's in a very practical sense, there are very, very simple tools that you can use. I mean, we have to remember that the experience of life that we have is kind of planted by our day-by-day, very regular activities that we go ahead with every single moment that we live. So simply having gratitude for the things around us, for our experience of life, for the things that make us happy, for the loved ones in our life, for the exciting things in our life, simply to direct our energies towards the positive focus that we have, the abundance in life that we have, and not to focus always on the things that we don't have, because there will always be somebody else with more of something or with a bigger house or something like that. But simply to be grateful for what you have makes you a rich individual internally.
Well, I also agree totally about that. I have also talked about people that drop a notch or two down the ladder or drop all the way down to the bottom, to the pits of despair, and how important it is to be patient with yourself and to just keep climbing the ladder back to your joy, that it's a setup for disappointment if you expect to jump all the way from the bottom to the top.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your own spiritual journey. I'm fascinated by the diversity and richness of your life experience, and I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Okay, sure. So where should I start? Let's start at the beginning. So I was born into a Hindu family. My parents were born in India. I was born in the UK. So I was raised as a Hindu, though I rejected the religious approach to life that was kind of all around me at the time in the culture that I grew up in. So I spent a large amount of my childhood and my youth rejecting that side of life. And then I went on as a teenager to study physics because I already had an interest in cosmology and the understanding of where we came from the mystical aspects. So I wanted to see from a Western scientific perspective what the view was on the cosmos of the universe. Where did we come from? What are we here for? Those very basic fundamental questions that we have. Also at the same time studying psychology. And then one dear friend gave to me a book which fundamentally altered my way of seeing things, and that was a book by Carlos Castaneda, which was A Yakai Path of Knowledge, Don Juan. And in this book, it contains a story of an anthropologist who goes off into the desert to look into himself, and it simply describes the journey of self-inquiry. Now, this was really one of the biggest seeds that was planted during my youth. And as a result of that, I went on to look into the shamanic path of seeing the self. Now, the shamanic path for me has been one of the most powerful ways of seeing inside and to really discover who I am as an individual and the place with how I connect in the universe and to how I connect to other people, how I relate to other people, how I relate to nature, and it really helped me to see that there's no real separation. And through this journey with shamanism, that also led me deep into meditation and to look into the different esoteric mystical schools from India, of yoga, of tantra, and to really go much further into this path of self-inquiry through meditation. And the two really go hand in hand for me today, to really connect the two in that internal world of being able to see yourself, to see yourself simply, like you. So simply the outside world is a mirror for yourself, for your consciousness. So if you experience the world as a dark place, as a miserable place to be, then it's simply because you're seeing with those eyes. If you see the world as a joyous place and a happy place to be, it's because you're seeing with those eyes. And it's those fundamental understandings have come after much self-inquiry. And you also describe quite rightly the stage of not going from being, let's say, in the place where you are to being at the top of the tree, as it were. And so obviously there were dips and troughs and peaks and all kinds of interesting journeys along the way, let's say, to where I am today.
Well, I can imagine. And certainly every person has got their own life journey and their own story with pits and peaks. I guess that what I'd like to explore a little bit more is how to avoid those pits and coast, if you will, at a higher level of consciousness. And I love what you were saying about projecting your reality into the world such that you can feel the vibrancy of life and the joy of life and the positivity of life instead of dwelling on something that is not joyful or that has a negative undertone to it.
Sure. I mean, this is one thing that I seem to find with many people who have gone on this spiritual journey, that they face this, as some people describe it, the dark night of the soul, the place where they've come from, possibly a darker place where they've experienced these darker aspects of the self. And really they've had to go through some aspect of the fire in order to come out of it and rise, because I'm a true believer in understanding our fears and understanding the things that we push away as being fundamental to understanding our positivity. Because those things that we're pushing away are giving us indications of who we are, of where we can grow, where we can expand, things that are really triggering us.
Yeah, so we don't need to be afraid of that. We need to embrace that as part of our human experience and use that as lessons to be learned.
Absolutely, it's the aspect of acceptance. It's the aspect of being able to look at a part of yourself and to be honestly able to look, and not simply to become attached to the emotional feeling that we have, but to be able to take a step back from it, detach from it slightly and say, okay, where can I learn from this? Because we can all go along with the emotional feeling that we have and continue to feel that same heightened emotion every single time, but we don't learn from it in that way. In the way that we can actually take a distance from it, a step back from it, and then we can look at it passively and say, okay, there's a learning experience for me here. And if there's a learning experience, there's a growth experience. And I'm a true believer in that life grows towards the light, that we grow towards positivity if that's our intention. And so if we go into this learning experience with that intention, then that's going to be the end result. We're going to come up higher, we're going to expand, we're going to grow as beings.
Well, let's talk about the importance of intention.
Intention is an amazing, fascinating subject for me, because it's something very important in pretty much every mystical school and every spiritual tradition across the earth. My Qigong master, when I was training in Asia some years ago, the very first thing he said to me was, Yi Tao Ji Tao. Now, this literally translated, the Yi is your intention or your will, and the Tao is the way of the energy, the path of the energy, and Qi is energy. Now, this literally translated, this means the direction of your intention, the energy will flow. And this is completely true with everything that you experience in life typically, that if you focus on the negative, then you will only see the negative. If you focus on the positive, you will see the positive. I mean, the beautiful analogy that a very wise teacher pointed out once, that if you look at the rose and you see the flower, you will experience the beauty of the flower. But it also has thorns. And you can choose to focus on the thorns if you wish, but you won't see the flower.
Right, right. Well, wouldn't you say that it's important in finding your way to positivity to be patient and compassionate with the shadow side of yourself and to not judge?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in that experience of going on our personal journey, if we understand it simply as a learning experience, as an experience of something where we're going to grow, then it's the understanding that our higher self, our higher vibrational self, is showing us these things in order to help us to grow. And if we can slightly shift our perspective in that way to understand and to accept that this is for the greater good of ourselves, then it makes that journey a little bit easier. That doesn't mean to say it's always very, very simple in practice, because it's not necessarily the case.
Right. Well, I think in terms of survivors of traumatic childhoods, the challenge that they have in terms of finding their way to the light, would you like to speak a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, it's very... for anyone that's been through significant trauma, it's very apparent that we become identified with this trauma, that we become this particular trauma. And oftentimes it can be a very, very challenging thing to have to go back into it, because obviously the experience of these things when we're going back into the memory, when we're going back into the trigger points, can re-trigger a lot of those emotions. And this is why when we're in that kind of healing space, when we're in that space of transforming that energy once again, the healer's path is one of really having to hold that space, having to really provide a space where that energy can be released in a very, very safe way so that it can be transformed. And this is not necessarily something very simple to do, but it is possible, because all trauma, all significant energy that becomes locked into us during childhood can be released, can be transformed in such really positive ways.
Would you talk a little bit about that process?
Sure. So if we look at the path of, let's say if we take it from a very practical perspective of physiology, when we experience trauma, when we experience any kind of peak experience, those experiences can be locked into our physiology. There was the work of Candice Pert, I believe, in the 70s, did a lot of research into neuropeptides and how our emotional responses actually become locked into our cells all over our body. Now, on a very practical level, this means that our biology essentially stores our history in our cells. And if it's storing our history, also with the aspect of neuroplasticity, that we can effectively re-trigger situations and then have ways to release them, to move energy, because if all of these things are simply manifested as energy which gets locked into cells, in the way that it comes in, there are always ways in which we can open those energy centers up again in order to release them. If we have the right tools, if we have the right awareness and the right practices in order to be able to do that.
What are some of those practices?
So there's a huge wealth of them. Just a few that I really love myself. The ancient Indian practice of yoga is really something that when practiced with a teacher who has a deeper understanding of the energetic aspect of yoga, this is something that can really, really help us move deep through deep, deep traumas. It's the understanding of the energetic system that's related to our physical body and how the various postures, how breathing techniques, how certain through breath, through our body, can effectively, really powerfully move these traumas that are locked inside us.
Oh, fascinating. Well, we talked earlier, and I want to get back to some of the things that you said, but we talked earlier about the importance of integrating body, mind, and spirit. It sounds like, from my understanding of yoga and what you're saying, that is a wonderful way to deal with those three aspects of self.
That's very true. It's very true. Yoga in its literal translation comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to unify. And the unification that yoga talks about is the individual consciousness of the individual and the supreme consciousness of everything around us. And this is only a metaphor because it really describes complete oneness of everything. It's only in this physical human experience that we go through that we believe there's a separation of the two. Now, the practice of yoga from the ancient seers of the past was one of providing a systematic way for the individual to go on a journey by connecting with the body, by connecting with the breath, to really reunify themselves with that consciousness, to reunify themselves with that cosmic soul, that cosmic consciousness that we all share.
Well, what are some of the other practices and tools that are useful?
So, there are a plethora of different schools of consciousness which all direct us towards the same thing. They direct us towards integrating our energies in a balanced way. So there are many, many different schools of meditation. For me personally, the path of the energetic tantric schools are amazing because they provide you with mechanisms and, let's say, a group of techniques for you to directly experience this energetic internal transformation. So there are ancient tantric Indian texts which simply describe techniques of meditation, simple techniques of meditation, of total immersion in the breath, of total immersion in touch, in dance, in every different aspect of the human experience, for us to really reconnect and integrate all of those aspects of ourselves once again.
Okay, well, I'm much more familiar with yoga than I am with Tantra. Is that what you're saying? It sounds like it has a lot to do with focusing on the breath.
Well, the specific tantra that I talk about is the Vigyan Bhairava Tantra, which is a text which describes 112 techniques of meditation. So some of these techniques focus on breath, some of them focus on touch, on sight, on movement of intention. For example, if you're familiar with the Vipassana meditation, which has been made more famous in recent years and which is practiced throughout Buddhism, this is the techniques taught in Vipassana are a handful of these 112 techniques. And there are many, many different aspects to be able to experience consciousness once again. They're very simple in their in their essence, when practiced fully, though, we have a different experience of life itself. We experience life with a different richness, a different depth.
Well, what do you think about the Western psychological approach of talk therapy as a means of healing? I've always wondered about the benefit from re-triggering trauma over and over again.
Yes, it's an interesting approach. I mean, if we... I'm not so familiar with all of the practices of talking therapies, but from my basic understanding that, for example, a relaxed state is used in order to repeat over and over again experiences of the trauma, experiences of a given experience in order to work through it. Now, I'm a big believer in understanding the different aspects of our consciousness in order to integrate an experience. Now, I know many people have gone through these talking therapies and experienced healing over a significant number of years. Now, if I look at the transformative effects of meditation by comparison, where you're practicing a meditative technique which is not directly accessing your conscious mind or your conscious awareness, but taking you into a state where you can experience your subconscious. And also, if you're moving into the realms of dream therapy and dream meditations, then you're also going into your unconscious. Now, I'm a big believer that these true aspects of ourselves are hidden in these recesses of our subconscious and our unconscious. And so I'm, as I say, I'm not so experienced in the psychological techniques, but certainly I see a lot more value and a lot more depth in being able to follow the trail of consciousness from our conscious mind into our subconscious through to our unconscious. Now, for me, that's a much more clear understanding of the way the thread goes, because obviously if something happens in our conscious world, something is also being implanted at the same time when these traumas occur in our subconscious, and also they end up with aspects disappearing into our unconscious.
Well, we're not only dealing with things that go into our unconscious from this life, but from past lives as well, aren't we?
Absolutely. I mean, there are many, many different theories and different understandings of this. If I look at it on an energetic level, there's obviously a shared consciousness which we all share. Now, if there's a shared consciousness which we all share, then for me there has to be some other consciousness which is carried with us, some other energetic consciousness which is carried with us for our souls to understand, for our spirits to learn as they go through this experience. So, yes, I mean, I completely agree.
What do you think about the benefits of regression therapy?
Once again, it's not something that I'm overly familiar with in terms of its actual practice, because if I haven't experienced it myself, then I wouldn't like to comment on it too deeply. I'm a very practical individual when it comes to understanding healing and understanding meditation and experience.
Well, I like that. I like that. Let's talk a little bit more along practical lines then. Let's talk some more about emotional healing and how that can provide energy transformation.
Sure. So this is something which is really, really a beautiful thing. I mean, in our society, certainly during my childhood, and I'm sure for older generations as well, in most of our Western society, we're taught not to express our emotions unless they're at a reasonable level. I mean, I grew up in England, and the English have the famous thing of having a stiff upper lip.
Right.
Now, it's one of those things that we should keep some kind of poker face when we're expressing ourselves, that we shouldn't be too joyous, or we shouldn't be too angry, or we shouldn't be too sad. Now, this is not really a true expression of who we are. Once again, if I refer back to children, children have no qualms about crying in front of you or about being angry in front of you if that's what they feel.
Right.
Now, it's only as a result of the way that children are brought into society, the way that we as children were told to behave. So when we were being angry, at some point it was cute, and then it stopped being cute for the parent, and then they told you to stop doing that. And the same applies with a lot of behaviors. A lot of these emotions weren't allowed to be expressed. Now, as we exist as adults, you find this restriction of energy, this restriction of expression continues to carry forward unless we can find a way to really start to live more freely, to smile more freely, to laugh more freely, to cry more freely, to be angry in the right kind of ways, to have ways to channel that that frustration, to understand that, okay, it's not a great idea to be angry and directed at someone else, but that frustration that someone is feeling has to be channeled, has to be directed and taken out of their physiology, taken out of their emotional system inside them. And then it's like a pressure cooker just waiting to go off at some point.
Right. Well, it can certainly lead to physical illness as well. What are some of the positive ways of dealing with anger and frustration?
So, there are many different approaches. I mean, we can use the aspect of classical meditation, of connecting with the breath to calm the mind, to calm the physical body. We can use chaotic aspects of meditation, which aim to basically exhaust the physical body to express this anger. So there are cathartic techniques of expression, of using breath, of using the body and connecting the two together to physically exhaust the individual during this practice and then to go into deep rest. So the start would be to exhaust the self by expressing all of this anger and expressing this emotion and this frustration, but then to go into a deep silent phase, a deep aspect of silence, in order to allow that energy that's been released to reintegrate into a really calm way.
Well, how do you suggest that people deal with anger in the context of relationships in terms of expressing it appropriately?
Well, one of the key ways, I mean, if we take a relationship between two individuals, the first thing, which goes back to something that we said earlier in the show, which I'm a true believer in, is that to understand that when we feel anger and we want to direct it at somebody else, that anger is not necessarily caused by the other person.
Right.
That anger is coming from within. It's coming from within us.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is very easy to say right now, but it's completely true in practice as well. In practice, this over time, that if you can look at the other individual and be able to have some thanks for them being able to show you your own anger. I mean, you're completely changing the frame of reference in order that they're simply the mirror for you. They're simply the one who's showing you that you have this anger inside. Now, if you can practice these things, as I just mentioned, with the breath, finding 15 or 30 minutes a day where you breathe deeply, using diaphragmatic breathing to cleanse your lymphatic system, for example, it will take you into a phase of deep relaxation, into a phase of deep inner calm. Now, if you practice this day by day, then over a period of time, this level of anger, this level of frustration will decrease significantly.
What would you say to somebody who says, I can't find 30 minutes a day, or I've tried it and I can't get past 10 minutes? What suggestions would you have to somebody like that?
If they can manage 10 minutes, then it's fantastic. The important thing when we're practicing any of these techniques is that any of these meditative practices is that when we do, that we remain focusing all of our energy towards them. It's like with anything else you do. If you're used to, let's say, running, if you're used to sprinting, if you're used to swimming or practicing anything else, the more total you are, the more present you are when you're actually practicing, the better you'll become, the more effective. effective the treatment or whatever practice it is will be.
Well, let's talk about consciousness as a general starting point for being present to life's joys and being aware of what is really going on within us and around us.
Sure. Consciousness is a really, really broad and deep subject, really. I mean, there are many, many different views on what consciousness actually is and our experience of it and how we move through it. Now, I mean, if we come from the physics approach, they have the approach of looking at information and looking at how things are interconnected, how messages are transferred from one physical atom to another. If we look at how we communicate, we have all of these different aspects of the potential for things like telepathy and all of these other esoteric realms of energy being communicated between one being or one presence and another. I mean, the whole experience of consciousness and how we understand it is so vast.
Yes, it certainly is. I guess what I would like to hear you talk a little bit more about is how people can maintain presence to the moment and how they can practice awareness as they're going through their daily lives.
And this is a really, really beautiful thing because you bring it back to the real practical aspect of how we live moment to moment, which is the essence of everything that we teach in these meditative practices. So what I would say to how we become present is simply to really become conscious of all of the different aspects of our lives. So when we talk about living life fully in every dimension, simply be aware of your breath. So at the moment you get the opportunity, bring your energy back to your breath. Just be grateful for your breath. When you're walking outside amongst the trees, just take a moment to look at the trees, to listen to the sound of the birds, to enjoy the sun as it's shining, to enjoy the clouds as they're out there, to enjoy the rain. Simply to be present and to notice life as it exists around you, to when you have that moment when you're talking to somebody on the street, really take a moment to be present and not to have the mind drift away to other things that you may have to do in your day. So really simply to be completely total in whatever you're doing in that instant. If you're chopping a slice of bread, then be total in chopping that slice of bread. Really take the time to enjoy that you have this bread, that you have the ability to touch it, to connect with it. And finding the enjoyment and the experience of these really, really simple things in life. For me, this is where true presence comes from.
Mm. Well, you talk about appreciation and gratitude as tools. Also, I've heard that interwoven as you've been talking today. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit more about the importance of gratitude.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, like many other people, I've had some challenging experiences in my life. Each step that we take is really precious. And to really, at the start of your day, in every moment of your day, just to be thankful for where you are, who you are, that you have these experiences, that you can enjoy this life that you're living, no matter what it may look like, no matter what you may have or not have, that you're able to take a breath, that you're able to simply be present in who you are and experience life as it is. I mean, those are very, very simple things, but they can give immense joy.
Well, it sounds like it comes down to acceptance as a very important tool for moving through life.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I can wish I were a unicorn as much as I like, but it's not going to help me.
You talk about challenging experiences, and I guess we could go back to even revisiting past traumas and coming to find some appreciation for how they have shaped us to be the people that we are today, or given us the opportunity to grow and to become the beautiful butterfly that we're meant to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head there. These traumas, I mean, oftentimes people have experiences in their childhood which maybe they've suppressed, which they don't even remember until it reemerges later on in life as a memory or something like that. But you put it very succinctly that these experiences are catalysts for our growth. They help us. They've given us the opportunity to live life in a different way, to live life with a different experience of life, and to really be able to appreciate them and not to be stuck in the victim is really empowering. It's a really, really powerful process when we go through healing trauma. That, I mean, we can always have this view of this trauma that occurred as an incredibly negative experience. But one of the most important aspects of healing these trauma is to understand that, okay, this thing may have occurred in the past, but a fundamental part of healing it is to accept it for what it was and to move on from it and to say, this is no longer going to be an anchor that holds me down, that I choose to take my personal power and to move through this and to move beyond this, and I'm going to be a richer human being for this experience.
Well, that requires a lot of willingness and a lot of personal discipline, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, there's a fundamental aspect to it, which is that we have to become somehow connected more with who we are. And once we can reconnect with our souls, with the part of us which is not necessarily identified with individual emotions, with individual feelings, then we can start to go on that journey. The process, when we look at it from the outside, can be very daunting. But if we go back to those simple steps we were talking about earlier, just to ground it once again, to start off with very, very simple practices of being grateful for the small things that we have, then you already have the stepping stones to start to go on that journey.
Well, it seems like another important thing for people to remember is that if they get sidestepped, that they need to be compassionate with themselves and to not beat themselves up for not having done it perfectly for whatever reason. So many of us, and perhaps all of us, believe that we have to get things right, and that we get stuck in the duality of this life instead of recognizing that it's all relative and that it's a matter of moving forward, that we are indeed on a journey, and that the only thing that's perfect is our spirits, but the human experience seems otherwise.
Yes, very true, very true. Mm-hmm. So again, it's one of those things of bringing ourselves back to these simple practices of really just anchoring in the very basic things that we're grateful for, that we're thankful for. So immediately, if we're planting positive seeds with ourselves, we're giving ourselves a platform to grow from and to accept from and to love from. And these are it's a case of building on the really simple fundamentals of life, I guess.
Well, I was thinking about the victim consciousness that you were talking about earlier and what a trap that can be for people, and that requires a lot of personal awareness of when one is falling into that that category or that role, and being willing to take a look at whatever may be triggering that, and being open to changing that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it takes a lot of courage at the start to be able to say that this thing that I'm blaming the outside world for may also have some roots within me. It takes a lot of courage to be able to say that to yourself and to be able to honestly look at yourself at that point and say, what is it, what part do I play in all of this? What part am I playing in this right now, in this moment? Am I holding on to something from the past that no longer serves me? Am I holding on to something that obviously it had some significance in the past, but now it simply no longer plays a healthy role for me? And if we can move beyond the point of identifying it, once we've identified it, then there's a process of letting it go.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because that, to a lot of people, is very elusive, the whole idea of letting it go and how to do that.
Sure, sure. So there are many, many different ways of looking at this. Now, in terms of, let's say, energy medicine, we have the idea that in many energy medicine circles, we talk about blockages and the way trauma is connected to certain energetic systems within the body, for example, or within the energetic bodies. Now, if we look from a psychological or from a mental perspective, then if we have a trauma, if we have this victim energy in some way, then it's very easy to become identified with, let's say, our aggressor or the thing that we're a victim of. And to really to connect our identity with this thing, whatever it might be, because it gives us some kind of safety. It gives us some kind of certainty of who we are, because then we're that victim and somebody else is at fault or something else is at fault. Now, this can be a very challenging thing for people to let go of, because if you've been living with this thing for 15, 20, 30 years, however long it may be, then this identity has become embedded within you. You don't know anything else. This is really has become your identity. So again, this is where we have to go back to that courageous aspect to say, well, if I look at this passively and understand that this emotion is just an energy, and if there's a slight blockage in this energy, if this energy is not flowing fully, then if I remove this little blockage, energy is simply going to be more abundant within me. There's going to be a more positive, more fulfilled version of this individual that exists as a result. Then you can start to let that go. You can start to accept that there is something more beautiful out there. There is a more beautiful existence for us to live.
Well, let's look at the larger picture. It certainly all begins within oneself. And I certainly believe what you're saying about how we project our reality into the world. What is your vision for the planet in terms of achieving peace, and how do you think that can be achieved?
So I'm a big proponent of what I call conscious transformation. So this is the understanding, as we were speaking about earlier, that with our intentions, with our actions, we will transform the space around us. So simply by us having this conversation, by your listeners tuning in, some transformation is occurring. This awareness thing that we all do when we connect in this way, because our consciousness is shared. Some small transformations are occurring, some big transformations are occurring. But in terms of entropy, in terms of momentum, we shift together. And if you look at the way a wave gathers momentum as it moves towards the ocean, if you look very, very far away from the shore, it may only be a tiny little ripple. But as it nears the shore and starts to gather momentum, because each individual particle touches more and more and more around it. And I'm a true believer that if these are the kind of messages that we're spreading, that if we're sharing this positive conscious message and we're living this out with our actions, with everything that we do, with everything that we are, then there is a positive transformation occurring. There is a fundamental shift occurring in the world around us. And we all are part of this.
Well, it certainly comes back to being connected. What would you say about the importance of staying connected to people? And I mean, some people tend to isolate themselves from human experience and don't benefit from the richness that can be derived from interacting with other people for whatever reason.
Sure. So, I mean, this is also something that has occurred throughout the mystic traditions, that the mystic will go off into the mountains, into the forest, to find themselves, to go on a journey, to go on an internal journey. I mean, I've been on that journey somehow myself, and I believe there's a fundamental part of it, part of us, which has to go on a journey inside to some extent. But I'm also a true believer that once you've been on some aspect of that journey, what you see, at least in my own personal case, what you see in the transformation that has occurred can't contain this thing and try and hold on to it for yourself. There is not even a question of doing that, because it's so abundant. It's literally oozing out of every pore, and it simply has to be shared with the world.
Well, I like the word abundant. Let's talk a little bit about that, about abundance.
Yes, I mean, when we're talking about consciousness, when we're talking about sharing and about connection, I'm a total, well, I don't even want to use the word believer. I know that this consciousness of abundance, of having, of being fulfilled and being total, if we emanate this, if this is what we truly are, that, and it comes from a deep space inside, then it's simply like the wave. Once again, it will just expand and expand and expand. And again, it's about the intention that we create. If we believe that there is love everywhere around us, if we believe that there is joy everywhere around us, this is what we will see. And if we believe that there is fear everywhere around us, then this is what we will see. So it's, you can come at it from either side. And I choose the path of love.
Well, I do too. And it reminds me of one of my favorite mystics, Anthony DeMello, who talked about there just being two states, love and fear, and anything that is not love comes from fear. And what would you have to say about that?
I would say that's absolutely fundamentally true.
So,
yeah, there's simply the existence in love.
What can we do to maintain that pathway to love? Certainly we need to be conscious, but do you have any other practical tools for people to stay in that place?
I would say, I mean, again, if we look at very practical tools, simply there are so many different ways of connecting with your heart, whether it's in connecting with your heart in relation to the people around you, to connecting with your heart into nature, simply to connect with your heart when you're taking your meal. In the practice of those things, simply being present, part consciousness, if we're simply doing that more and more and more in everything that we do, then that energy will radiate from us. We are energetic beings. And if we're living in that space, if we're moving from our real heart-centered space, then that will simply, it will manifest in our relationships. It will manifest in the way that we connect with nature. It will manifest in everything that we do.
So, one more question.
Sure.
Jesus talked about love and forgiveness. What role do you find forgiveness plays in maintaining a positive vibration?
I think it's completely fundamental, because if we, the opposite of forgiveness is simply to hold on to some energy, whether that be some resentment or whatever it may be towards somebody else or something else. Now, that energy that we're holding on to, that we're simply grasping onto, is some aspect of the victim that we spoke about earlier. And this is not really going to serve our higher self. It's not going to really help us moving into love.
How true. Well, I wonder if you have any final words for us. We have a few minutes remaining, and I would love to hear if you have anything in particular that's come to you as a result of this hour that we've been spending together.
I would just like to share a little bit about the aspects of really this practical mysticism that we spoke about.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is really something that's very, very dear to me, and I'm really in this practice as something that I live by. And the most important thing, I guess, I'd like to share with your listeners is really the understanding that everything that we do moment to moment, day by day, is that they're basically all the small steps that we take on our journey through life, through our experience. And so simply to become aware, simply to become conscious of simply all of the very, very small things that we do will build our house of consciousness. This will build our very experience of reality.
Well, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So I can be contacted via my website, which is holisticomkar.com. So that's holisticomkar.com. And, yeah, I'd love to hear from your listeners and just to connect. I also have a Facebook page which you can connect with through my website as well.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a joy to have you with me today. The hour has just gone so quickly.
It's been an absolute pleasure for me as well. Absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Thank you, Omkar.
Thank you very much, David. It was my pleasure.
Okay, have a blessed evening.
And you.
Thank you.